Hello, everyone. Can you hear me? Can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes.
So my name is Stan Lee. I'm with the East Bay Municipal Utility District. I'm a project manager on this project.
Hi, I'm Tom Canale. I'm the network supervisor, and my group handles all the telephony, the technical aspects of all the telephony and networking systems.
My name is Julie Sullivan, and I'm a supervisor in the contact center.
My name is Tom Fox, customer service manager. I'm the customer for the project.
Lee Walden, East Bay Water, I'm Vince Telecom.
Okay, so thank you everyone for joining us today. And if at any point you can't hear us or the connection sounds kind of fuzzy, just let us know.
Okay, so Tom or Tom, would you like to get started?
I didn't have anything to say.
No, I haven't much either. Other than, the purpose of this call is to, if you have any questions about understanding the RFP, its intent, the direction, our high-level goals, feel free to chime in. As a quick overview, the RFP is fairly self-explanatory about the size of the contact center. One detail that was left out is that the contact center, the main number is our main point of contact for all district business. So not just
Hi, this is Pratik from Extended Communication.
The next time I'm not going to do the force people to call in. Now's the name. We were just discussing that parameters of the contact center, especially on the number of calls received by the contact center, is that the calls listed in there, the estimated 350,000 a year, are our direct customer calls, which our agents do handle. The R866 number is the main point of contact for all district business. So the actual call count for other people, contacting other departments, water conservation, things that are outside of customer service, the actual calls that come in but which are not handled by the contact center is higher. So that's something to keep in mind. And we will publish that total call volume. At a later date, a soon later date, we'll publish what the total number of calls received by the 866 number is versus the calls that are actually handled by the contact center.
Tom, are you going to do all those you're just sending them out as an email?
Yeah, well,
or actually
all,
on your
all
site?
The questions that come out of here that we're going to try to summarize and send out as a we may be able to do an email.
Right. Typically, our process is to post any questions onto our website, so it will be the same page as the RFP, and it will be listed as an addendum. And so that way everyone has equal access to information at the same time.
So that is about it, other than to say that we are looking for a hosted-based contact center solution, and we're wishing forward to have very, very strong disaster recovery or actually disaster resistance aspects to it. We wish our contact center agents to be able to take calls from anywhere. Primarily, it'll be in our Oakland facility, but we do have a number of home agents, 15, and that number will probably grow. But we also, and the home agents will just have independent internet connections, and right now they have plain old telephone service for the voice connection. We are, when it comes to disaster recovery, we like to have agents be able to get into the system and to be able to receive calls without doing anything different for the regular operation. And that there is discussion about whether or not those calls should be internet-based voice calls or if they should be callback, some type of number registration, and then the system calls them with a call. The other operational kind of parameter is great flexibility in changing greetings and emergency greetings and the ability to do those things on the fly, especially making announcements about that that our, for whatever reason, our contact center is closed, and that type of emergency change. Do you want to add anything?
This is Tom Fox, contact center manager. I wanted to add that I think one of the issues that we would like is we'd like to divert as many calls as possible into the IVR. Right now we have probably 85 to 90% of our calls coming into the contact center. We'd love those to be handled, a greater percentage of those to be handled as self-service. I think we've pretty much identified the key needs that people would call in for. Perhaps the scripting is wrong, the vectors need to be changed, but for some reason we're not retaining as many people in the IVR as we would like to retain. Again, as Tom mentioned, we're going to a hosted system, and that's for disaster preparedness reasonings. Also, we do tend to increase the number of home agents that we have being able to respond. So typically, if we live in a earthquake zone, earthquake area, it's very foreseeable that we could lose our contact center. As a result, we need our contact center reps to be able to log into the system with a cell phone or from home. 15 of them or so right now can log in from home. Ten additional reps we're setting up with computers at home so that they could be available to log in the case of an emergency. Also, on the support side for the contact center, since we would be going with a cloud-based solution, support is extremely important when things happen. We need a very fast turnaround. We don't have the luxury of asking people not to call. So that's about it, and I'll take any other questions as we go along.
And one more thing. So this is Stan Lee. I'm the project manager. Tom Fox mentioned about how we would like more customers to have self-service opportunities through our IVR as opposed to speaking to a live agent where possible. One of the main requirements of this project is that the IVR solution that's being proposed will need to integrate with our internal CIS system. And the name of this system is called Customer Watch, so IVR would need to be able to integrate with Customer Watch in order to do things like get an account balance for an account, get the past due balance, determine what their payment history is, and other common functions that would be expected from an IVR system.
And, yeah, that's one of my questions. Is that the one and only database that we'll be integrating with?
That is the primary system that IVR will be integrating with.
Is there a middleware application that sits between?
I don't think so.
No.
Between Customer Watch or whatever it is and... No,
no. I mean, Customer Watch, of course, has its own N-tier structure of middleware and database, but that would be transparent to you. You would be communicating with Customer Watch.
Got it. Okay. Tom, you mentioned...
Via web service?
Yes. So currently, other external systems interact with Customer Watch via web services or flat files.
You had talked about trying to improve the containment rate in the IVR. And in the bid, you talk a little bit about natural language speech recognition. Can you elaborate a little bit on that and where you guys are today with the level of automation you have with speech recognition and how that ties into this requirement, maybe a timeline for that? Give us a little more ideas on that.
Tom, I don't think we have any speech recognition.
No, we don't.
There is no speech recognition.
There's none being deployed at all?
Capability right now. And so we're open to that to the extent that speech reco can help us in self-service and help move customers through the IVR faster,
yeah.
or maybe educate them a little bit better along the way. That would be good.
Awesome. Okay, that's good to know. So you talked about some of the earthquakes and some of the disasters that you have to deal with. Does East Bay Mud have an outbound capability? So if there's an earthquake somewhere, you can reach out. Is that already in place?
No, not
an outbound to customers. No, we have the ability with planning to be able to put together names, and through a vendor we can contact people, but we don't have that capability right now.
And that's out of scope on this RFP,
that's
right?
Right. That is out of scope. Currently, we also use another vendor as a emergency preparedness platform in the case that we did have an earthquake.
Just out of curiosity, do you find, this is probably a good question for you, Julie, do you find that you're processing inbound calls for other agencies that just happen to call East Bay MUD, and maybe they have a parking question, or are most of the calls really directed towards East Bay MUD?
Most of them are directed towards East Bay MUD. Sometimes they call about something different and we'll transfer it to the correct department that needs to receive that.
Any idea what that percentage? Because I was telling them earlier, of course, that's the main number for all things.
Right.
So when people will call about almost anything,
mm-hmm.
but that percentage is not very high.
Yeah, I would respond to that. I would say it's way less than 1%. We occasionally will get somebody calling, and then they'll also want to sign up for gas service,
which, of course, they
can do.
We'll
give them a phone number. Sometimes people will call up, and they'll say, my hot water is out. They somehow think that we provide their hot water service as well. But
sure.
I would say 99.59s in terms of the amount of calls that are really, truly directed to it. Accurately.
I had a question regarding the quality monitoring piece. You're doing voice and screen capture. Are you doing 100% on both?
No. No, we're not.
Okay.
Is there Julie?
We're
100%
on 100%
voice.
100% voice. I think it's 5%.
Screen capture.
I think I remember seeing that on the speech or on the screen. Are there any speech analytic capabilities? Because you're talking about scoring agents.
No, we don't have speech. You know, where they would say a word and it would find those types of calls. We don't have that.
Right.
No, we don't have.
So that's not a requirement.
No.
Okay. So you're looking for the supervisors to be able to go and listen to the recordings and then be able to score agents manually?
Yeah, I could elaborate a little bit more on that. Right now what they do is they pull the recording. We have a form that's been approved and vetted through all the different supervisors, and we've tested our scoring. So they go through these questions and they give them a score, and then the person either passes or fails. What I'm finding as a manager is that it takes a tremendous amount of time for a supervisor to sit there and just listen to calls, score them, send them back to people. It's a huge waste of time. Any way that we could find to be able to automate that would be better, even a faster scoring mechanism. And I don't have any idea what that would be, but I can say right now that we have one supervisor that's probably 90% devoted just to doing quality monitoring, and that person's resources are more valuable to me in other areas.
Okay, thank you.
So when it comes to host aid, there are a couple of options that you guys have. Have you thought about any of these? I'll give some examples so it kind of eases out.
Yeah, and I want you to speak up if you could, so
sure.
We can
my question is related to the options on host aid. So there is a private cloud option which is dedicated to you guys, which is exclusive to your organization. There is also a host aid which is offered to multiple people, multiple customers like you, and you kind of share the premise. So people prefer one of these two models, or sometimes even a third model, where some parts of your infrastructure are still used, and there could be some pieces that you could use from the hosted cloud, which could be like just the ACD, since you've already invested on, let's say, the recording piece.
Mm-hmm.
You may not want to throw that back to the cloud. You might still want to keep that. So a few consideration points are security, other than cost, right? Security to keep your customer data within yourself. You don't want somebody to catch some of these information. You might not have control, especially if there are like last four or credit card information or any of those, right? So did you guys go through, do I want to have a private cloud all dedicated to us here at East Bay Mart, or is it okay if you guys share?
So there is no preference. In the RFP, there is an exhibit G that does ask, but what is your security information gathering? There's a couple questions in that area. There will be no customer data host. I mean, all our customer data is in the CIS program.
Yes.
And the authentication, the user authentication will be against the IVR, and all the IVR will be telling you back is that, you know, yes, this is a valid customer or has validated customer onto the next step. So private versus public space, shared space. We are okay with the shared space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just want to see your security model
mm-hmm.
to understand how our environment is going to be separate. We do have in the RFP that we would like to have a private connection, you know, not going through the public internet in order to have the highest best performance. So that goes. So you have to demonstrate, you know, how you can do that secure link, basically, where, you know, we're going to use an extranet. So how, you know, how are you going to handle that? On the hybrid model, our first choice is not to have anything here. We may change our minds once we see the proposals, and if they're all astronomically high, maybe some aspects that we want to end up keeping here because we have that infrastructure already in place. I hope that answers the question.
Okay. Yeah, it does. Thank you.
Yeah. We do have, as I said, we have a very high concern about availability. Our only contact center is in Oakland. There is 1,000 different ways on sunny days that it can be off the air.
Mm-hmm.
And we feel very fortunate that we really haven't had any one of those 1,000 opportunities. But we did have a stolen vehicle crash into the B box that held all our communications going into the building. It wiped the box out, but it didn't break all the lines. The contact center stayed up. A good number of lines, actually, the vast majority of the lines stayed up. But on the parent, we would be like, "Wow, you know, we don't know most of the communication lines stayed up because that box was on its belly. But the next time a stolen vehicle wipes out the B box, we may not be so fortunate.
Got it. Thanks.
I was looking at the RFP, and I see that you've got essentially 29 CSRs that are dedicated for voice. Did you say earlier that number can go up? And if that's the case, do you know roughly how you'd need to scale in terms of number of agents?
Sure, that number can go up or down depending on the different varying types of workloads that we have. We don't have a dedicated contact center, so we could probably. We put everybody on 35, 40 people would be maximum. Realistically, on a given day, I don't think we get above 30 or 31. And the reason is that we use them for back office work, administrative type work. So if call volume is low, we just divert them over to other types of non-contact center work. Then we pull them off that work as call volume goes up and down. So it's very, very dynamic staffing.
Okay, and thanks. That's helpful. On the email side, you do quite a bit of email. How many do you have agents that are dedicated just for email, or are they kind of in the voice pool as well?
We have a senior customer service rep who's dedicated to email right now. I think the RFP says we're getting about 1,000 to 1,100 a month. That number has been climbing in the past year. That person basically vets those emails and will assign those out as project work. I just mentioned how people will take people off the phone. Well, we'll take people off the phone to be able to respond to some of these emails. So that person, that senior, gets the email, comes to custserve@ebmud.com, and then she will forward that, job that out to one of two or three, one of four or five available reps to respond to. So it's not a real efficient mechanism. There is no real email, there's no email handling. It's very, for us, a very manual process right now.
Yeah, literally, they just forward the email, and then the rep takes care of it when they can. There's
exactly.
No queuing or anything like that. Okay.
Exactly. There's no queuing. There's no automation. There's no system to keep track of the numbers of email. There's nothing. So any right. Looking for some kind of an email management approach, which is going to be less labor intensive.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any major scheduling issues or milestones to be concerned about, funding, board, anything like that, equipment going out of service?
What, in terms of review for approval, you mean on this?
The implementation.
We would look at a, we would select a finalist, we have to enter into a contract, before it goes to the board, we'd have to agree on terms, that goes to a board for approval, and then the rest of the steps after we have approval, I think it's spelled out, isn't it?
Yes, on the, in the RFP, there's a calendar of events. And it has the anticipated dates of reviewing the RFP, submitting, selecting a primary awardee, going through the whole legal process, and then submitting it to the board for approval. And roughly 48 hours after the board gives approval, we're allowed to start. Now the other potential, not necessarily milestones, but end of April of 2016 is a big date because we have a lot of equipment going completely out of service at that point. And if the drought gets really nasty, the number of resources available from the contact center and from Stan's group are going to be decreased, and that's going to be a little bit of a scheduling. Juggling
the schedule. Yeah, that's a good point. That's an unknown right now with the drought. We don't know how bad the drought's going to get. Typically, drought to us can be pretty catastrophic because we can't hire and train people fast enough to deal with it, and then it's upon you. So when that happens, other things tend to fall by the wayside. So if the drought gets bad, if we get a lot of complaints, you know, that could slow us down. I might make another generalized comment regarding the contact center or some of my priorities. We're heavily labor intensive, and to the extent that we can decrease call length, get people off the phones as quickly as possible, or that we can contain people into the IVR, that's better for us. That's one of the reasons why we want to pre-authenticate callers. We figure that we can probably save at least 15 seconds per call, maybe a little bit more if we don't have to authenticate. So that's a very important piece to us. But anything in a proposal which reduces labor costs, retains customers in the IVR, or otherwise reduces the total call handle time once a call comes in, is an asset for us.
Tom, in the RFP, there's the district wishes to implement static as well as dynamic configurable outbound call campaign functionality. Can you elaborate a little bit on what
sure.
the outbound call campaign and the dynamic functionality might be?
In the past, before we had our customer watch. We had a legacy system, and that legacy system had the capability of doing outbound calls. So East Bay Mud, being a water wastewater utility, we billed most of our single-family customers once every 2 months. When those customers are late, that outbound campaign would get a flat file from CIS, and then that flat file would basically play an outdial to people to remind them to pay their bill. So by dynamic, we've never had any dynamic system that was more static system, but in the future, we would like to be able to have some ability for them to touch tone to a payment vendor or something. In the future, we might even have a call campaign to people. We want a yes-no response. We might want to collect that. Right now, there is no specific dynamic campaign that we're considering. But I'll give you an example with the drought. Now, we know that certain areas are going to be using more water. If we could take people by zip code, pull from our CIS file, and load that right into the outdial, we could send out a message to people asking them to watch their irrigation, reduce water use over the next couple of days. If there's an emergency outage with a main being out or an aqueduct being out in a particular area, it would be great to be able to drop files into the outdial and notify customers on an emergency case basis.
Mm-hmm.
And those notifications are, there's no interactive response. It's just, this is a
right.
message to me.
Right.
We're having a blah, blah, blah. Don't worry about it.
Of course, one of the limitations we had in the past to doing that is that was every outbound call took away the capability of an inbound call. So we were limited to how many calls we could have going out at any one time. So we would schedule those campaigns during times when we didn't have that much call traffic.
So if you are you open to outbound tech that may have for late pay, may have a link to do a self-serve pay?
Well, so the current outbound system, which is not working the way it's supposed to, that's why it's not being used, that we do have an outbound application. It would take a 48-hour notice or a final notice. And it gave them, press 1 to be connected to the bill payment system,
mm-hmm.
Press 2 to talk to an agent. It does have that ability. It has a long, overly long text message too about you can pay your bill online by going to www. blah 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 blah. We would like to recreate the whole outbound call experience and give people options to do stuff, especially based on the time of day. The current campaign parameters were just 8 to 4:30, but for some reason, weekends were not excluded. So potentially, if we drop a file in there on Friday afternoon, they would get a call on the weekend. So we don't do that. It's just there's little stuff that should have been operating to like what you consider to be standards, such as answering machine detection.
Okay.
Kind of standard thing.
Thank you.
You still want to retain that third-party payment option.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever happens on the IVR would terminate from an experience perspective on the hosting. But when they opt to pay, then you must have an ability to transfer this back out to a third party,
right?
Or toll-free that you have already set up. Right? So.
Right. And just to let you know, we have another project going on where we are taking all of our payment vendors and consolidating them under one company, and that's ongoing right now. So in other words, the systems that we currently use for payments are not going to be the same ones going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Will that one payment vendor be working through the customer watch system, or will we need to interface with that one payment vendor utilizing a different business application?
So typically when customers go through an IVR system and they want to make a payment, that would be transfer over to the payment vendor's IVR system. So the answer is no, you would not have to go through Customer Watch to make a payment, because one of the goals of that payment project is that we are going to rely on that payment vendor to handle payment. As I was saying, one of the goals of the payment project is so that all channels of payments flow through that payment vendor. We don't have to handle anything at all, and we don't have to interface with multiple vendors to handle different functions and channels such as credit card or electronic bank drafts, so on.
And also, we're not planning to give the payment vendor any authentication information. The customer has to re-authenticate to the payment vendor, right?
Okay. There is some discussion around doing single sign-on for the payment. Okay, but at least from our point of view, from this project, IVR system, when we transfer a caller to the payment vendor's IVR system, then I don't see a problem with having them re-authenticate again. Because when we talk about single sign-on, we're really talking about web-based functionality, and that's not applicable in an IVR environment.
I would like to ask a question as to how the calls are actually routed into the current call center platform that you have. Do the calls come directly from the service provider into the call center, or are they routed through the Cisco call manager now and then via a connection over to the call center platform?
The calls go directly to the Avaya call center right now. So we've got four PRIs that are hooked to the Avaya switch. Anybody dials the 866 number, it drops right into the IVR/ACD functionality of the Avaya product.
So all calls would be, since we're all calling in the 866 number?
Mm-hmm. So the RFP references is Cisco PBX.
The headquarters is currently running on Cisco VoIP. And instead of maintaining a separate phone system, since we're going with hosted, we'd just as soon have the agents go back onto the Cisco phones.
So as part of the linkage between the hosted center and the agents, our preference for here is to have the calls be trunked back to our Cisco system for delivery to the handsets of the agents. While home agent, it would either be a VoIP call or potentially most likely be a plain old telephone service call. We do want to try to ensure the highest quality of VoIP quality for the customers. But we are open to either direction, especially for disaster recovery purposes. We mostly kind of expect the agents will be taking the calls through their internet connection. And making the trunking connection between your system and our Cisco system, that is an area where we will need assistance in how that's going to be configured. If you can't support that, that's okay. We just need to understand how you expect to pass calls to our agents.
You've also requested for a survey at the end of the call. So is your current process today during the experience, does the agent hang up first? Or do you wait for the customer to hang up? Is that a part of your process today?
You want to hear the future or you want to
Today or future, whichever.
Today is not important.
Okay.
Today they just, they'll go ahead and just transfer it, and then they let release the call.
Okay. So from an experience perspective, most call centers want the customer to hang up, so they ensure that they've heard everything and they don't want to let anything unanswered, right?
Right.
So they wait for the click tone and then they hang up. So when you want to do a survey application, you post the question right up in the beginning and you say, we have a survey at the end of the call, so please stay on. So which means as a behavior, the agent, when they are used to hearing the click, right, the agent does not know that there is a survey coming up because you are like surveying the experience at the end of the call. You don't want to let the agent know that they're going to answer a survey, right? So from that perspective, are they waiting for those click tones today? Are you training them not to hang up until you hear nothing of that sort today?
They're
right?
Just, yeah, they're not waiting for the click.
Okay. Okay.
But just to add on to that, yes, having it be more transparent, have the agent not aware of what's being offered, all that is more preferable. It's not how we're doing it now, but you're correct, that would be the better way to do it.
Right. So in most cases where there is a hang-up, meaning the agent gets for it and the customers also hangs up, right? But they did accept to be a part of the survey, so they wait for about 30 seconds to 3 minutes because the customer did accept or sign up for the survey. So they do a callback and still the same 3, 5, 10 questions, how much ever you set up, right? You still go through that. So that kind of goes back and becomes like an outbound functionality on the IVR.
Is that a question or a statement?
It is a statement, but okay. I'm just looking at your scope.
Yes.
It's almost like a one-liner, right? So, but it's much more deeper as we process it when you schedule things, right? Because it's completely automated, so I don't need to worry about the agents. But then the customer will look at this number and say, I just call these guys, why are they calling me back? It's more experience-related stuff that happens. And then when they call back, when it's hosted, right, you want to know how to treat it. So you may want to write vectors a little differently than you do now. These are new processes, but it can all be set up. I'm just trying to.
Okay.
So on the earlier question about how many agents we have, our total number of agents is our total number of agents. We're not going to have additional staffing unless we get special approval for some special event like the drought. So.
But we also have training too.
Right.
So you got 40 agents, and then you want to train.
Yeah.
You got to have enough capacity to handle however many you want to train at the same time if you run it all 40.
Right. So, I mean, that'll be something that they'll have to manage on the count.
Yeah.
You know, unless you have a special no-cost training seat.
Because the other thing we run up against is the number of supervisors, and then we get a question and we can't log on because all the supervisors are logged on. So we have to give somebody off to be able to log on to help troubleshoot.
So for maintenance and management purposes, there may be a slight change in the number of seats required, but whatever's on the RFP, please go with that number. If we had to have 5 more seats, then we would communicate, hey, you know, what does it take to add, you know, five more seats for X amount of time.
One thing to be aware of is that the RFP does specify that we need to have the ability to have a testing/training system. So in other words, people who are brand new to the district, who just got hired, who don't know how our business processes work, should have some sort of environment where they can do some practicing, do some training, see how the IVR works, et cetera, without impacting the functionality or capacity of the actual live system.
So that means then that let's say in the RFP, I believe it says you have 40 agents, four supervisors and a manager. So are you saying that we should account for an additional agent or two in the count so that they can do training, or not quite sure following?
Probably not, because we're never going to really have 40 people there at one time. You've got people who are out sick, ill, working on project work, so I don't envision it. You need to capability.
Okay, thank you.
You have requested that the 100% of the calls are recorded and approximately 5 or 10% of the screens are recorded. Where would you like those recordings to be stored? Do you have a data center that has that you have some storage servers available that you'd like to keep those storage or keep those recordings stored at? What is your preferred vision there?
I'll answer your question with a question. We are looking for the best way to retrieve those stored recordings. And as the classic, the one phone call you want to listen to is the one that is not on, that's a move to tape or move to someplace and you cannot find it. I believe our intent, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the storage is on your system, and where we pull down stuff to our archiving system as need, or because obviously at some point the relationship may end and we don't want to be trying to download 7 years of voice recording. So we like you to list out there in the RFP. It says 12 months of real time storage or real time access, and then another 12 months of archiving. In practice, that other 12 months of archiving may be us pulling that data down locally to our system. But you'll just need to explain on the storage and real-time retrieval how you would do that. If your system does not allow you to store more than 3 months, then say it's 3 months, and you must download all the recordings, and hopefully they are labeled by agent ID and, of course, timestamp, so we know what's what. Because that's also another problem is you're not able to find the right recording because it's not indexed correctly.
Any specific standards that we need to know, either in terms of your environment today, OS requirements, security requirements, testing requirements, any standards that we need to keep in mind?
On our feed, we list out what our current contact center desktop consists of: Windows 7, Service Pack, something 1, or whatever it's at, the 64-bit OS. Currently it's 32-bit, but our true standard is 64-bit. When it comes to security standards, anything that we transmit over the internet, we of course want it to be some type of encrypted tunnel. That's why we're interested in a private link to your hosted center, and anything over the web, HTTP, port 443, on the recording. I don't know, what's our favorite bit level recording? That's easy to work with.
Everybody runs their own codec. I mean, we got 729, we got 711,
I'm talking about the
ADPCM.
Messages, we record the prompt. Is it 8-bit mono or?
It's pretty much our ADPCM 8-bit mono raw.
Yeah.
The other, one other issue on the recording is if, you know, the customer does not want their recording recorded, ability to kill the recording.
Do we actually want to, are we required to offer that to the customers?
We are by law.
By law? Okay. So hopefully your solutions have that, that where the customer can opt out of a recording.
Is that in the RFP, the opt-out option? I don't recall seeing it.
I don't recall either.
Yeah, just to clarify, currently we don't have that capability to not record them. So what the rep will do is transfer it to the supervisor. The supervisor will then call the customer back. The supervisor wants to not record it.
Got it. So you want to play a message at the beginning of the call in that your call will be recorded.
That's
if you choose to not have your call recorded, please press whatever.
That would work.
If your solution has that ability on a per call basis to flag it for not recording, then put that in there. Otherwise, you know, we do want 100% of the agents recorded, but the supervisors, you know, do not need to be recorded.
Because you know they're good. Mm-hmm. You know they're good. Otherwise, it wouldn't be supervisors.
I have a question about adding agents. What's your expectation to add or remove agents in terms of time frame?
I don't understand. Do you mean to increase the number or just to add them or take them out of the system?
Correct. Yeah. Let's say, you know, you needed to add another 5 agents. What was what's your expectation level in terms of how quickly you want to be able to add or delete them off the system?
Our expectation regarding adding or deleting has to be at the moment. We have to be able to have that ability to add them or delete them, if I'm understanding your question right. Our ability to get the agents, that could be 3 months, 4 months.
Now, I think what he's saying is that if the...
maybe I'm not hearing
you right. That the process, you know, if we add an agent, if we add a new agent, that their system may require 24 hours to do something to the system.
Oh, okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, what SLA would you want from us in terms of, you know, if you wanted to add another 2 or 3 agents? 24 hours a day, a week.
24 hours would be fine. I mean, we're going to know several days before somebody comes online. So, yeah, even 48 hours would probably work for us.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, the hiring process at a public agency, of course, is lengthy. So once a person is hired, and then they're going to be trained on the regular operations and then be trained on the system. So, you know, literally, we know the future agent's name, you know, potentially 2 or 3 weeks before they actually start taking calls. So it's 24 hours or 48 hours is not a problem.
Thank you.
Sometimes we screw up and we start someone on the phone without making them an account. So that's always a problem. That's not your responsibility.
Okay, understood. Thanks.
Yeah, we're not done.
But we do reuse the account information. So we can go in and pull up the call records online, XYZ. It could be Jane, Tom, Frank, Bill.
Could be different people.
Different people, even though it's the same phone number.
I don't know if you guys understood that statement, but so we assign, you know, the internal ACD number. Every agent has, you know, assigned a number, but it's a block of numbers. So when 4412 is, that person moves on, and we get Sandra moves on, and we get Norm. Norm gets 4420, you know, 24, and you know the past call records. If we ever if we're pulling out information, we'll pretty much go by by the date, but potentially by how the agent name or the agent ID, depending on how the calls are stored. If you have an unlimited number of agent IDs, that every new agent can get a new ID, then great. But today we're forced to reuse agent IDs.
Anything on change management, change control, maintenance schedules that we need to know?
Yes. obviously our contact center, if you saw in the RFP, is Monday Friday, 8 to 4:30 p.m. So, if those are the only hours we're taking calls to agents. However, the IVR, of course, is open 24 hours. Ideally, the IVR is never closed. All your system maintenance, you have the ability to roll this over to another system, so the IVR can still do its job. We do have a change management process for which we need to be able to notify stakeholders of potential downtime or customers. If the system does have to come down, we need to know well in advance, a couple weeks in advance, in order to put messages up and notify customers and direct people to the web page, or at least have some type of alternative mechanism for them to do process.
And for fire drills, we need people to shut the system down.
Right. Yeah. Hence my opening comment about we need to have the ability to shut the contact center down and direct people to some of the mechanism. Do you guys ever have a fire drill over there? That happens. Planned fire drills are once a year. The unplanned ones we have in this building are fairly random. Any system maintenance, we expect that to happen. We do want to see the system updated. Whenever there's any agent screen change, weeks in advance, documentation showing what the changes are, so the supervisors can retrain employees as needed. Also, we like to have the it's an RFP, so we can answer anything. If some change is so radical, we like to have the ability to say, no, we like to stay at version 6.7. That new version 7 is great, but it's too freaky for us. But again, that's just another comment to make that when you do maintenance updates, how do you keep the system available? When the new revision of code comes out, how do you give that information to the customer for training purposes and those type of things? And if for some reason we wish to reject the maintenance window because we're doing a drought outreach and that's a bad time, that we have the ability to get that postponed.
So are there any other questions from anyone?
I don't logistically, is it possible to find out who's on the conference call?
Generally, we do not tell people who's bidding on the project or who may be making inquiries or participating in it. Now, ultimately, when people do submit bids, then that becomes a more public process.
Yeah, we do not have a registration process.
Yeah, and we don't know who downloaded our RFP, who's looking at it, because that's all available on our website. Anyone at all, some random person through Google can go and look at it.
Do we have any browser?
You had met.
Say again?
Please repeat.
You had mentioned that the outbound.
Go ahead, please.
That you had mentioned that the outbound dialing capacity of the system needed to have English and Spanish and Chinese. How about the inbound IVR? And if you're going to be doing any type of speech recognition in the IVR, which do you want to include those three languages?
We have to by law.
Yes,
we have to include those by law. At a minimum right now, Chinese, Spanish, and English. Not for this RFP, but in general information, I know that the state is trying to expand that, trying to get us to all companies to include either 10 or 13 different identified languages, which obviously gets unwieldy. But right now, we're just dealing with Chinese and Spanish.
How many agents would be participating in any type of outbound dialing, an agent style of outbound dialing?
Very, very little. We have currently right now we have, let me explain, we have probably 5% of our call volume is Spanish, probably maybe 1 or 2% is Chinese, probably closer to 1%. Because we don't have a huge number of people calling in, what we'll often do is we'll have those foreign language customers leave a message, and then that agent will give them a callback. So that's an example of where a callback is given. Sometimes our lines can be full, or perhaps a customer has already spoken with a customer service rep and will call back and leave a number for that person to call. So the callbacks that they do are to existing customers or to customers who leave messages because of language issues. But we do not have any outbound calling programs such as delayed bill, billing related, final bill, turn off notices, that kind of a thing. We don't do any of that by agent.
The question I was about to ask you was Customer Watch, and you know, of course, has its dependencies on Java versions.
Right.
So we're going to update Java and other system updates as we need. If your system requires something special, we need to know that in advance.
Right. And so this goes back to change management. Of course, you have your own change management process where you push out patches and other fixes, and so do we. And we have our own change management process, but if emergency situations come up, then we might have to do changes or take the system down on short notice. So if you have any requirements where we would need to tell you in advance or things like that, you would want to let us know, especially for things like if we upgrade. If we do Windows patches to, let's say, SP2, SP3 of Windows, or if we upgrade Java from, let's say, Java 8 to Java version 9, is that going to cause any problems on your end? Now, given that this is a cloud-based solution, we would expect that any such dependencies are minimized. But nevertheless, any special requirements that you know of would need to be communicated to us in your RFP. And, of course, your system would need to fail gracefully. So, for example, if IVR tries to contact Customer Watch and happens to be down, there should be some nice message or nice way of letting the customer know that the system is temporarily unavailable.
Are there any other questions?
Could you tell us a little bit more about Customer Watch from a client perspective, you know, from an agent-level perspective, how they interact with it, and, you know, just from a thinking through the potential of doing a screen pop, how would you present the data? Can we present it to the server and it'll pop the screen to the agent, or do we need to present it at the client level?
Okay, so let me say that Customer Watch is a rich client and server system. So installed on each of the contact center agent's computers is a client for Customer Watch, which then communicates with the centralized server. And so right now we do not have screen pop functionality, but we are looking for proposals as to how you might want to do it. Now, I can say that from a Customer Watch point of view, screen pop would probably be, there would need to be some sort of mechanism where your system communicates with the server and says, I want to pop up this screen on this agent's computer for this particular account number, and then we, meaning my technical team, would handle that functionality behind the scenes. But keep in mind that Customer Watch doesn't really know anything about agents or phone numbers or IP addresses, anything like that. We do know the user ID of an agent who is logged into Customer Watch, and that user ID is our internal LDAP system, their Windows credentials. And that's about all we know from a Customer Watch perspective. So somehow there needs to be some sort of functionality where if screen pop is needed, it needs to be able to identify the agent by their user ID, because that's how Customer Watch would know how to send the screen pop to the appropriate machine / agent.
Thank you. That's clear.
Okay.
If there is any additional operating questions, procedural questions, practices, along with any RFP-related questions, you know, please just ask away.
So if I remember correctly, the 15th is the due date to submit any additional written questions?
Not necessarily. So people can ask questions at any time, and as they come in, we will look at the questions and determine which ones require an answer that would materially affect an RFP response.
Mm-hmm.
And then those we publish as an addendum and post those onto our website for everybody to see. So no, the 15th is not the absolute date for you to ask questions. You can ask at any time. Of course, we encourage you to ask earlier, because if it's 1 week before, then by the time we get a response back to you and you're trying to finalize your RFP, that may not be the best way to operate.
Right. Thank you.
And those of you who haven't submitted an RFP to a public agency, that deadline is a hard deadline. And please, you know, follow these directions explicitly. There is very little room to accommodate conditions that don't meet the requirements.
Right. So in other words, especially make certain that you submit all of the exhibits that are required. Make certain you respond to all of the questions. Basically dot all your I's, cross all your T's. Because if we get an RFP and we're not sure about whether you've met a requirement, we're not allowed to guess. We simply have to reject it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so are there any other questions? And again, this is not your last opportunity to ask questions. It's just that this is a more interactive format. If you have any questions after this conference, just submit them to me by email, and we will get back to you.
I have just a couple questions. Or in terms of the end of life, you indicated in the RP that the Avaya and the Verint systems are end of life. Is there like a drop dead date on those? Or
well, we have an interesting internal discussion about that. So roughly at the between now and the end of April, various systems are going to drop off vendor support. Obviously, they're still going to work. there's not time bombs built into all software that's going to cause it not to work. But our ultimate deadline is really this time period next year. And if for some reason we are not in a fully implemented system, one, I'd be shocked. Two, I mean, very, very bad things have happened. you know, we would find a way to limp forward on some type of unsupported platform to ensure we had some type of technical assistance in order to bring the system online if something really bad happens. Tom mentioned earlier, we do have a hosted DR ACD system currently, so we do have the ability to take calls, queue up calls, and do basic treatment. We would not have any IVR functionality. That's not our ideal state, but we've been there before, we know how to handle that.
Which hosted DR ACD are you using today? Could you say the name of it?
Oh, there we go. we're using 8x8.
Okay, thanks.
Just from past experience, as you dig through the RFP, most of it, of course, is made up of our internal insurance requirements and contract requirements. Feel free to ask those insurance questions as soon as possible to make sure that we can get you in contact with our risk management or insurance people that understand what we're looking for. They're all fairly standard. I think the newest one is professional or what is it?
Right, it's the cyber liability, I think, is new.
Due to all the data breaches, we like to see what type of cyber breach insurance we're going to require you to carry something of that nature. And on the sample professional services contract, that is a sample. It would be modified to meet the interest of both parties. However, it's in your best interest not to get too crazy on making up your own contract, because part of the approval process is coming to terms on a contract. If we cannot come to terms, then we have to reject you and go to the next vendor.
Right, and keep in mind that our legal department has the ultimate say on legal matters, as is expected. So regardless of what information systems or what the contact center may want, if legal tells us something has to be in the contract or something cannot be in the contract, then they are the final arbiter of that. So again, it is in your interest to, as much as possible, to stay with the wording of the standard contract. But of course, we recognize that there may be room for negotiation on certain items. That said, in the past, the majority of people haven't really had a problem with our standard contract. We, as a public agency, tend to be pretty fair. We operate in a similar manner as other governmental agencies, so there really shouldn't be anything that can be construed as being too one-sided.
I have a question related to that. Of course, every company wants to use their standard legal verbiage and T's and C's. Have you ever done that, where you have reviewed and accepted a company and outside companies' legal terms because they were similar?
I can respond to generally no, but in terms of when we have a, we might have indemnification language that refers to goods, pipe, let's say, that we're taking. Now you're dealing with a professional services issue, you know, pipes, hard goods, trucks, things like that don't come under that. So we might write that out because it's not specifically called for in the contract. But generally speaking, our terms and conditions are, I don't want to say inflexible, but rather stiff.
Thank you.
Yeah, in general, I mean, if you were to say, we're going to substitute your contract with our contract, that,
showstopper.
That's probably not going to happen.
Right.
Mean, we have signed other people's stuff, like AT&T, because they just don't care. they won't bend at all. Now, we've embedded parts of other people's contracts to say into our format all right, you really want to have this section. We feel this, you know, it's a risk level, whatever, we're willing to accept, so we would embed that paragraph in our
right.
contract. But in the end, we want you to sign the framework of our contract.
Right. Thank you.
I had another question on the 8x8. Is that how long have you had the contract with them? Is that like a month to month, or is there is it coming up on term? Or could you say?
So it's we've been with them for a few years. We are on a month to month basis. So we have we have no obligation other than to give them 60 days notice. We have a monthly standby fee that we pay, and if we need to use them for more than 30 days in a row, then we have to use their standard pricing.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I'm good.
Okay, so if no one else has any questions, then we will end the call now. I'd like to thank everyone for participating in this conference, and we appreciate your interest in doing business with the East Bay Municipal Utility District. Thank you, everyone. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Participant has
thank
left
you.
It.